Hi, this is Ron LeGrand, and welcome to Fast Cash with Quick Turn Real Estate Step by Step. Before we get started discussing the fine art of quick turn real estate, I thought I'd take a minute to tell you who I am and what qualifies me to share this information with you, and then we'll get right into the lessons. When I first got involved with real estate, I was dead broke auto mechanic trying to make enough money to make ends meet. There was no such thing as disposable income around my house because it was all disposed of long before I got it. I was 35 years old and bankrupt and lost and didn't have a clue what I wanted to be when I grew up, but I knew it wasn't fixing cars in the hot Florida sun. It was 1982 and I saw an ad in the paper that said something like, "Come learn how to buy real estate with no money or credit and get rich by next Thursday." Well, that kind of appealed to me because I had no money or credit, and I really wanted to get rich, whether it be next Thursday, next Friday, or whenever. I just kind of liked the idea of getting rich, so I attended that free seminar. An instructor got us all excited about real estate and showed us how people were buying real estate with no money down. And then he said, "If you can come up with $450 and attend our two-day training this weekend, we'll show you all the secrets." Well, I wanted to, but I had one big problem. Well, actually, I had 450 big problems. But something compelled me to find a way to get the money, and that's exactly what I did. I borrowed it from two friends, and I showed up for that seminar. And that decision changed my life forever. It changed my family's life and their family's lives for generations to come, and not to mention hundreds of thousands of my students and their descendants into the millions. That one small split-second decision that could have gone either way made me millions of dollars and spawned countless numbers of millionaires all over North America and in countries I can't even pronounce. In fact, most of the stuff taught in that seminar was way over my head. I was clueless and I could barely spell real estate. But I picked up one idea I felt I could use, and within 3 weeks, I went out and I used that idea to make $3,000 from real estate using no money or credit, and because I had neither one. I immediately called my boss and I said, "I'm upping my income. See you around." Now, the biggest thing that seminar did was get me involved in real estate and committed to changing my life. For years, I've been looking for something, but I didn't know what it was. And when I got my hands on that $3,000, it became crystal clear that real estate was my future. Fast forward 2 years, and I amassed over 276 units, some single family, some apartments, but not including the ones that I sold along the way to make a living. I was a millionaire, at least on paper. I had over $1 million in equity within 2 years after getting into my business, starting with no money or credit. But hey, have you ever tried to spend equity? Well, then reality arrived. I sat down one Friday evening to pay my bills and realized that my outgo was bigger than my income and my upkeep was becoming my downfall. All I had accomplished really was creating a great big ugly mess. I'd spent 2 years buying the wrong properties the wrong way in the wrong areas for the wrong reasons, and I built my empire on a house of cards, not on a solid foundation. I just didn't know any better. You see, I really didn't understand the real estate business. I just bought properties because I could, with no money or credit. I bought all the crap savvy investors wouldn't touch. They'd already been to the school I was about to graduate from called the School of Hard Knocks. All my low-income properties in war zones with brainless tenants were sucking me dry, financially and mentally. My days were spent solving these tenants' problems and listening to all the worthless reasons why they couldn't pay the rent. I spent the next 5 years selling off all my junk for dimes on the dollars just to get rid of it. It took me 7 years in the business to really understand it and to get my life back. Oh, I made a good living during that time, in fact, several times my previous income, but I sure wished I'd have known me back then, and I had the systems that my students currently have. Well, on second thought, it probably wouldn't have mattered anyway because I wouldn't have listened to me if I'd have known me. I'm a man, and men don't follow the instructions. It's that thing called testosterone, you know. Well, after 7 years in the business and about 400 houses later, I built an easy system to turn real estate into cash immediately and cash monthly and cash later. And I made it a real business. Anyone could operate from home to make obscene amounts of money. And that's about the time I started teaching what I'd learned. And somewhere along the line, someone called me the world's leading expert on quick-turning houses, and the name stuck. Well, now fast forward a few more years of teaching and what I know, and while simultaneously doing what I teach, and I've bought and sold over 1,600 houses to date and still buy two or three a month with an average profit of over $40,000 each with the help of my ex-secretary, who's now my full-time partner, and her husband. And they spend 10 to 15 hours a week in real estate, and I spend about an hour a month just talking with them. Over the years, I've created a mountain of home study products, written millions of words in print, and shared the platform with past presidents and movie stars and actors and politicians and sports heroes and business leaders and super wealthy individuals from all professions and some of the best speakers in the world. I've spoken to audiences as small as 20 and as large as 20,000 in hotel rooms and coliseums all over North America. And I've gazed in amazement and sheer joy as so many thousands of my clients and new friends have pulled themselves out of financial mediocrity or downright poverty and made themselves financially independent millionaires and some even multi-millionaires from the words that left my lips and the time we spent together. So many of these new millionaires have now become leaders, reaching out a hand to those in need and helping them climb the ladder to success. My legacy has spread like a swarm of locusts, and millions will be affected or already have been by the positive impact I made with a few carefully chosen words that left my lips or got put into print at some time when students were ready to receive them and convert them to action. New generations will profit directly or indirectly from the words in this course. I learned a long time ago, only when the student is ready can the teacher appear. So much of my time now is spent in front of good people who are serious about getting rich and will do what it takes to become one of the 3% who can not only say they're rich, but prove it, prove they've achieved true financial freedom. Now, people constantly ask me, why do I continue to teach? It's hard for them to understand why a multimillionaire would take the time to work with those who aren't. Well, my answer is simple, really. First, make no mistake about it, I get paid well for teaching. It's not a mercy mission, and we're not a nonprofit organization on purpose anyway. Second, I have to do something with my time, and golf and fishing and diving and all those neat little things I can do get old after a while, and making millionaires never gets old. And I can't think of anything I'd rather do with my life. It's fun to do what I do. It's just kind of fun to be me. Besides, I've been married for 40 years to one woman. Her name is Beverly, and between the honeydews and her requests and the 9 grandchildren, 3 of which live right here on our estate, it's just nice to get away from home once in a while and go out and do seminars and meet with my students. Now, Beverly says even though we've been married for 40 years, it's closer to 3 if you take out the travel time. Truthfully, I'm just a simple auto mechanic with a redneck background who barely got out of high school. Frankly, I'd rather have a good hamburger than a steak. I hate wine and alcoholic beverages, and yeah, I smoke cigars, and I listen to country music and jazz, and I go to the movies a lot, and we have horses and cats and dogs and chickens, and we grow stuff in our own garden, and I don't tell anybody, but I even have my own tractor that I use to plow that garden. So there you have it. That's the real me. And I'm just a simple mechanic that did well and I was willing to share with others. And so now let's spend the rest of this course on you and how I can add your name to our Millionaires Club quickly. On the next 9 CDs, you'll hear me being interviewed by the Mentor Magazine as I march you through each step to buy and sell houses and make a lot of money without using your money or your credit or having previous experience. So hold on. Here we go.
I think we probably ought to go over the 5 steps to success in this business or in any business for that matter. There are 5 steps. Regardless of what business you're in, regardless of what product or service you buy or sell, these 5 steps are applicable. And step 1 is to locate prospects. I've never seen a business with a product or a service that didn't have to locate prospects, some people who wanted to buy that product or service. And in fact, if they didn't, they were a business that wasn't around long. The second step is to pre-screen those prospects. Pre-screening the prospects means you got to separate the people who are suspects from the people who are prospects and deal only with the people who want to deal with you. And that is certainly very true in a real estate business. And in fact, one of the biggest problems that you're going to have, one of the biggest mistakes you can make, one of the things that will take you out of the business more than anything else is trying to deal with people who don't want to deal with you. It is your job, if you're going to buy real estate, and I mean any kind of a real estate, is to separate the people who need to sell from the people who want to sell. People who need to sell will make you an awful lot of money very quickly. And in fact, they're the difference between success and failure. People who want to sell, people who want retail price for their property, people who don't need to sell, therefore have no reason to take less than retail price for their property, are people that are going to steal your dreams if you let them, because they're going to convince you that there aren't any deals out there where you live, or that this real estate stuff doesn't really work, none of which is true. I have students all over North America, exceeding over 300,000 now. I'm making millionaires all over North America and other places in the world as well. And the only way that you're going to get from learning the real estate business to becoming a multimillionaire in it is to quickly determine the difference between people who need to sell and want to sell, and understand that you're only going to be able to deal with the 5% or so that need to sell to make your fortune. And if you don't know that the other 95% have got to go, what will happen is you'll spend all your time trying to make people motivated, when in fact you should be whacking them and not dealing with them at all, and focus on the few that want to do business with you. The third step in our five steps to success is to construct and present offers. Constructing and presenting offers sounds complicated to a beginner, but in reality, there are only two or three different ways that you're going to use to buy a property. And once you learn those two or three different ways, that'll buy 90% of all the deals you're ever going to do, and that'll get the checks rolling in immediately. If you try to learn every way there is to buy real estate, you're probably never going to get started doing anything, because you will become overwhelmed. And the truth is, since most of 90% of your revenue comes from just a couple of ways of buying properties, maybe we should focus on that. Get some checks coming in, get some income coming in, and then as we start earning, we'll start expanding our horizons and learning. We at Global Publishing have an entire academy of a curriculum that you can take, and that is at your speed, just like any other type of a university. You start and learn the basics, and then you take electives, and we have the same opportunity available for you. And if you want to learn more about that, you can just go to ronlegrand.com or call us at our office at 800-840-8389 and get that information anytime you need it. But constructing and presenting offers is the key that unlocks the vault. Because if you locate prospects and then you pre-screen them, but you don't do anything to take action to buy their property, then obviously you're just wasting your time and nothing's going to happen. Step four is follow-up. Follow-up is a step that is usually ignored in most businesses, because most businesses just don't understand the importance of it. Follow-up means that you're not going to do business with everybody today. Even those who pass the pre-screening test, all of them are not going to sell you their house immediately. And the ones who do pass the test are worthy of you following up until time and circumstances changes their mind. All sellers' minds will change with time and circumstance. And if you will weed out the ones that have a reason for you to follow up, ignore the rest, get rid of the rest, take the 5%, work the 5% until they've either sold their house or until you've bought it, you will discover that 82% of your revenue will come from the art of the follow-up. 82% of all your revenue will come from the second through the seventh contact with a prospect. But let me reemphasize again, there's a big difference between a suspect and a prospect. So far, I said locate prospects. We're going to discuss that tonight. Pre-screen those prospects, construct and present offers, and then follow up with the ones that did not pass the test today. In other words, they're good prospects. They're not suspects, they're prospects, but we couldn't buy today because time and circumstances just wasn't right. Give them a little time, follow up, let them know you're in the business, keep contact with them, and you will discover that you will buy a lot of properties after a week, a month, 2 months, 3 months, 4 months after the original contact. And step five is to sell quickly. Sell quickly to get the cash. Sell quickly to create the revenue that will support your lifestyle, increase your lifestyle, get more goodies coming into your life, take the pressure of financial distress out of your life, and create the freedom to do the things you want to do every day. And without that cash coming in, without that real revenue, that's not going to happen. You can build all the equity you want, But without that cash, without that revenue, that equity is not going to mean anything to you. And in fact, it's going to be like a bottomless pit, and you're just going to wonder why you're doing all of this. You start creating cash flow in your life, creating revenue, replacing your job income quickly, freeing you up to do the things that you've been wanting to do all your life, and this business is going to change your life forever, as I've seen it do so many times. However, it might be that if your cash flow needs of today are taken care of, that selling quickly is not what you want to do right away. I'm the world's leading expert on quick turning houses. I'm the best there is at what I do, quite modest too. And I'll be the very first to tell you that the true wealth in real estate or in equity or in business is in the equity, and that's surely true in real estate. However, if you need that cash flow now, if you need the money coming in immediately, if you need to pay the bills, if you're sick and tired of being on a budget and you just want things to change, then obviously your only exit strategy is to sell quickly and get paid. If that's not the case, if you're comfortable with your current lifestyle, if you have money coming in now, if you're satisfied that you can buy whatever you want whenever you want it, then selling quickly is probably not something you want to do now, because right now in our society, in this country, all over this country, in fact, in almost any major city, the appreciation factor is increasing property values very, very rapidly. And in fact, it would be crazy to kill the goose that laid the golden egg if, in fact, you don't have to have that check a week from Friday. So selling quickly is in the eye of the beholder. What I always advocate my students do is to get some cash flow coming in quickly into the business. And then when the time is right, you can hold on to some of those properties that you like. And a good mixture of both is probably the only way you're going to really like this business. Sell some, keep some. But in the beginning, if cash is king, sell them all. We'll worry about keeping them some later. All right, with that said, I'm going to get right into locating prospects tonight. We're going to go through all kinds of ways to find some deals. These certainly aren't the only ways to find deals. In fact, I used to teach a three-day event with nothing but all kinds of ways to find prospect or find people with properties for sale. Tonight, I'm just going to go over some of those. A lot more than anybody on this call is ever going to implement, and in fact, should implement. What I would like for you to do is pick out two or three of these that feel comfortable to you, probably two or three that require little or no risk, and implement them and see if you can get people calling you with houses for sale and take it from there. People ask me all the time, what do I do first? Well, the first thing you must do is crank up your buying machine, and cranking up your buying machine means locating prospects, because we'll go back to the five steps. If you don't implement step one, if you don't start getting people to call you with a house for sale, the other four steps don't mean a darn thing. In any business, you take an ice cream store. You go down and you open up an ice cream store. If people don't walk in that store that are interested in buying ice cream, you're not going to be in business very long, and the doors are going to close quickly. So you must understand and make sure that you spend your time and your focus on generating prospects, and that machine never stops. Because if that machine stops, the rest of the machine stops. Locating prospects, step one. Every business must locate people to buy its products and services, or it'll soon be out of business. In our case, we must locate people who have houses for sale so we can buy their product, a house. That's not a hard process, but it's deadly if it doesn't get done. In fact, when I converse with students who aren't doing well, it usually comes down to one of two reasons. Either they haven't done much to find deals, or they're finding them and letting them get by because they don't recognize what a deal looks like. We'll fix that in later lessons. Before I go any further, we should discuss the use of realtors. It's easy to pin all your hopes on them and assume that they'll do most of the work for you, but sorry, bad news. Realtors are not going to be where we're going to find our best deals in this business. In fact, the only time you're going to use realtors is when you're making offers on listed junkers, rehabbers, because the properties are getting purchased for all cash, even though it's not your money. Since they're getting purchased for all cash, the commissions are going to get paid out of the all cash purchase, and everybody can understand the definition of all cash. But realtors will not be used in the pretty house business for two reasons, actually. first, they want to get paid, and most pretty house deals will be debt takeovers or options where there's just no money to pay them with. If the seller doesn't get paid, then the realtor can't get paid. So if the seller gets little or nothing, then the realtor gets little or nothing. And realtors just have a tendency to frown on getting little or nothing when they're involved in a deal. But the second reason is really the biggest roadblock, and that's that realtors will not advise their clients to sell like you want to buy sometimes. Oh, they don't have a problem with them selling for all cash, but they'll block the sale and destroy a deal if it concerns taking over debt without liability, like we do when we get the deed, or on an option deal, or on a lease option deal. And they just don't get it. They just don't understand. And if they do understand, frankly, a realtor would not be doing their duty to the seller if they advise them just to deed the property to you. There's nothing wrong with that. We're not violating any laws, but frankly, if I were a realtor, I wouldn't tell my seller just to deed a property to someone and hope they make the payments as well. So I don't hold it against them. It's not their fault. It's just that they will stand in the way between you and that seller and create a problem that very well will keep you from buying pretty houses. Therefore, your only market to buy pretty houses is for sale by owners. You must deal with the seller directly, and all listed properties are off limits unless the seller can convince the realtor to drop the listings. Note I said the seller must convince the realtor to drop the listing, not you. If you do, the realtor will most likely want to get paid if you buy the house, and rightfully so. They have a contract, which is called a listing agreement, and you must not interfere with it unless the realtor chooses to cancel it to help the seller. Violate this rule, and I promise you, you're going to a seminar and you're going to learn the definition of a new term called tortious interference with a contract. They were there first. You cannot take listed deals unless the realtor is willing to release them. And the minute you call the seller, as far as that realtor is concerned, they have procured that contact and they want to get paid. So you do not contact the realtor. If the seller calls you and there's a realtor involved, you simply ask them if they can get the realtor to release the listing, or you don't mess with it until it expires. Ugly house offers are usually all cash, so it's easy to see how the realtor gets paid from the seller's proceeds. However, if your entire ugly house business revolves around buying listed houses, you'll have a tough road ahead. And here's a strong word of advice. Your business must not depend on realtors to do anything. Are they useful? Yes, in some cases, like buying listed junkers, but don't forget they control the deal and you're not their only customer. This buffer between you and the seller will drive up the price and make listed houses tougher to buy. Your best market will always be unlisted houses, and best of the best are houses that the rest of the world doesn't know are for sale because they're not on the market until you plant the bug in the seller's ear that you're a buyer. Here's a simple rule that separates real players from beginners. And this is probably worth writing down if you're taking notes here. The easier a deal is to find, the more it costs. Listed houses and HUD and VA repos are easy to find. Therefore, they cost more and less profit will occur. It's always better to get sellers calling you, but we'll discuss how ways to find deals where you can call and make the first contact as well. But stick to the FSBOs, and I promise you, your business will be easier. You'll make a lot more money when you discover who wants to deal with you and work only with those after you learn the art of pre-screening.
You know what? I haven't even read it.
The three best ways I know to find ugly houses. Remember, these are only for ugly houses. Now, some of these will work for pretty houses, but let's focus on finding ugly houses first, and then we'll jump over and talk about finding some pretty houses next. And we might even talk about how to find some high-priced pretty houses as well. For those of you who have already discovered there's an awful lot of money in those high-end luxury homes, as I have and so many of my students have. The first step to a successful business, any business, is to locate prospects who are predisposed to doing business with you, as we discussed. And the good thing about finding ugly houses is that they're so easy to spot. They just sit there and glare at you. They're ugly. Anyone can see they need repairs, and we assume if they're ugly, there's a reason to contact the owner to see if we can buy it at a wholesale price. And if you'll recall, our only focus on the ugly house business, on the junker business, is to buy them at a wholesale price. We must buy them at wholesale, or we're not going to want them at all. Obviously, it's a numbers game. You'll buy some and some you won't. In fact, you won't get most of them, especially the ones you think ought to be the easiest to buy because they're the ugliest. I'll tell you a little story. Recently, I seen my Roth IRA grow by over $86,000 from two checks on two ugly houses I bought and rehabbed and resold. And I made $43,230 on one and $37,233 on the other. And I did it tax-free for life inside my Roth IRA. And that was only my half of the deal because both of those were brought to me by partners, and they got half the proceeds. So my Roth got $86,000 in it for tax-free for life, and I didn't put up a red cent, not one red cent. And, of course, my Roth didn't either, and there was none of my credit involved in it. In fact, your Roth IRA cannot guarantee debt anyway. So it just came to my mind when we were talking about ugly houses here. It's a great business if you do it correctly. But a reminder, your only market to buy pretty houses is for sale by owners. And that same thing will hold true with the ugly houses. The more you deal with the seller direct and the less you deal with realtors, the more deals you're going to get. And I think you will discover that if you will heed that comment and don't ever get away from that and don't ever get away from those basics, your job is going to be a lot easier. And I can't tell you how many students have come to me and said, well, I just can't find any deals. And then after inquiring about where they're looking, they're actually trying to get realtors to go out there and find deals for them. And it becomes really apparent to me very quickly why they're not getting anything done. You cannot pin all your hopes on the realtors. However, when I get into my ant farm story here in just a few minutes, I will teach you how to find the realtors, the right realtors, to help you find the junkers. But remember, it's just an add-on. I don't want your business revolving around getting the realtors to do all your work for you. Ugly houses are very profitable. In fact, too profitable for you to ignore. And I'm afraid I've created a monster because I'm hearing too many students say that they'd rather do the pretty houses than the ugly houses. And that won't fly. There's just way too much money in the ugly houses to ignore them. It would be a mistake to ignore them. Sure, pretty houses are easy in and easy out. No contractors and little or no costly entanglements. So what? That does not excuse you from harvesting the gold in the uglies. And two examples I just gave you about the money I put into my IRA ought to drive that point home. And here's something that's worthy of writing down as well in case you ever get the urge to only do ugly houses. You can't find pretty houses without finding ugly ones. And you can't find ugly ones without finding pretty ones. So people ask me all the time, well, where do I start? Do I start in the pretty house business or do I start in the ugly house business? The answer is very simple. You go do some of the things we're going to talk about in this lesson, and you get some people calling you, and if the house is ugly, you're starting in the ugly house business. If it's pretty, you're starting in the pretty house business. That's the long and the short of it. You let the market tell you where you're starting. Turn your back on them if you will, but it would be a darn shame to trash a couple hundred grand a year because you're going through the business with blinders on and you're not learning both sides of the business. Not only that, but uglier houses are easier to find than prettier houses simply because you can drive around and spot them because they need work. And usually you'll find the house first, and then if in the ugly house business you find the house first and you back into the seller. In the pretty house business, you find the seller first, and then you back into the property. And besides, buying ugly houses requires very little communication skills. Frankly, it's just not hard to ask a seller, you know, what's the least you'd accept, and if you like their answer, fine. If you don't like it, you say, is that the best you can do? And there's not much negotiating to it. You're either in or out. And if rehabbing turns you off, you have several choices. You can get someone else to handle it, like I always do. I will never rehab a house, never did. In fact, I don't touch a house with my own hands, and rarely do I ever go back to it. Or you can wholesale it, which is a very simple process that anybody could do. It's very easy to learn. If you want to learn the art of wholesaling, you can contact us anytime, and we'll get you turned on to some information that will make that happen for you. All right, here's my best three ways for finding junkers. And if you'll implement just one of them correctly, you should easily do a couple of deals a month. Do them all, and who knows? But the key word is correctly. There's a big difference between doing it and doing it correctly. So I'm going to tell you the right way. And then, of course, if you're male listening, you're probably going to go do it your own way. And then when you find out that it isn't working the way you expect, come back and listen to this again and do it the right way, and it should start working for you. I just didn't dream this stuff up. I have students doing all over the country what we're going to talk about right now. And method one is the ant farm. and this is by far the most productive way to find junkers. I call it the ant farm because it involves a couple of people, ants, running around looking for ugly houses and bringing them to you. And frankly, if you can be your own ant, if you don't want to pay somebody, I usually pay them about $5 each to go out and find junkers and bring them to me, and they meet my criteria, and if they're in neighborhoods that I assign them. I think you should be your own ant for some time. So that means you simply drive around in low-priced neighborhoods and write down all the addresses of ugly vacant houses, then come home and track down the owners and call them to see if you can strike a deal. And here's some key points and where most people fail in the ant farm. Number one, you got to be in the low-priced areas. If you're not in the low-priced areas, you probably won't be finding the junkers. You just won't find the kind of prospects you're looking for that are ugly in gated communities. That means for some people, you're going to have to get in your car and drive out of your area into a lower-priced area and get down low where the uglies are. For some people, that just means you need to get out and take a walk. But you've got to get down where the lower-priced properties are. And I don't care where you live, and I don't care what the market values are where you live. If you live in an area like San Francisco, it may be that your low end is in $250 to $350 range. Take that in most other cities in the country, and that'd be a high end. So it's all relative. Wherever there's a city with people living in it, there's a low end and there's a high end. You better get down in the low end if you expect to ever find any junkers. Number two, you must look up all the addresses on the tax rolls and determine if the mailing address is different than the address of the vacant house. If it is, you probably found your owner. So if you track down the owner like that, you look up on the tax rolls, and I'll tell you how to do that in a second. You find that the owner is in a different address, you simply call information, dial 411, and ask for the phone number. Don't send them any letters. Just pick up the phone and dial 411 and ask information for the phone number. And then you just pick up the phone and call the seller. And you can usually get to your local tax rolls online by going to your county name and .org. For example, I live in Duval County, so it would be DuvalCounty.org. Now, that's not going to be applicable for every county in the United States, so if that's a problem and you don't find it, just pick up the phone and call your tax collector's office, for crying out loud, and ask them how you get to the tax records online. Now, there are a few states with privacy issues, and you'll not be able to do it, but I can promise you that there's some place on your internet where you can find who owns properties in your area, and if there isn't, the tax roll office can guide you to somebody who can help you get that information or to a service that'll do it for you. Number three, if you make contact with a seller, the rest is a waste of time. Do what you have to do to make it happen. In other words, a lot of people fail by going out and getting this information and piling it up, but they're just too afraid to pick up the phone and call the seller. If you don't make that contact, you are never going to get to the third key of your business, which is constructing and presenting offers. So piling up high is not going to make them any money until you get on the phone and track down these people and call them. So that would be a big mistake. Don't let it happen to you. And number four, you must hire a skip tracer to find the ones you can't easily find. And this is where most people quit right here. Yet it's where the real money is in the business. In fact, if you'll just make sure that you do not stop because they're hard to find, and you go the extra mile and you hire a skip tracer, and I'll tell you how to do that in just a second. If it costs a fraction of what you think it does, if you just do that and let them find the people for you, you're going to do what most people won't do. And remember, the harder they are to find, the bigger the profit. So actually, your best prospects are the ones where you can't find them easily and you have to go to a skip tracer to hunt them down for you so you can then locate them on the phone and track them down. Write this down. This is where you want to go online to find anybody and everybody you want found. The web address is findtheseller.com, just like it sounds. Findtheseller.com. When you go on that website, you'll have to get an account with them. Usually that means you give them a credit card number or send them a check or whatever to set up an account, and they will literally track people down and send you a report on each and every one of them for as little as $9 each. And frankly, if you're not willing to spend that to find these people, then this is probably not the technique that you want to use. But if you play the numbers game, you'll discover quickly that spending $9 each, it is worth it, because these are some of the best deals that are out there. Again, that's findtheseller.com. That's seller, singular. Number five big mistake is you must understand it's a numbers game. You just can't get upset if after the first 10, 15, or 20 houses you find by driving around, you don't get a deal. Well, it could be that you get one deal out of the first five, or it could be that you don't get a deal out of the first 20. So what? How long did it take you to drive around and find 20 ugly houses? The answer is probably a couple hours if you're looking for the ugly ones and you're driving up and down in the lower price market. Well, let's just assume you send a batch of 20 houses to findtheseller.com, and they find about 70% of them, which is about normal with a surface search, or about 14 sellers. That means that you'll pay about, about $140, $150. Suppose you just get one deal out of 14 houses that wholesales for $10,000 profit, which frankly is about an average profit on a wholesale deal. Most of my students are making anywhere from $5,000 to $25,000 per deal on houses they never owned or never laid a finger on. Just find them, get a contract on them, and then flip them quickly to a bargain hunter. I don't think we need to run a spreadsheet that putting out $140 and getting back $10,000 is a pretty good return on your investment. And in fact, the objective is to do that 1, 2, 3 times a month. In fact, I've got students all over the country doing that 2, 3, 4, 5 times a month. So crank up your buying machine, and the ant farm is the best way. And if you don't get a deal from the first 20 leads, just go find 20 more and don't whine about it. Keep finding the junkers, keep tracking down the owners until you pick up the phone and call one of those sellers and you get the right answer. So if you do what I just said, I promise you, you won't fail, because unless you totally screw it up, every time I implement the ant farm, we get deals. In fact, I've implemented with both of my son-in-laws who have gone out and drove around and found properties and brought them back, and we track them down just like I told you to do and pick up the phone and call them. And I just can't tell you how quickly this is going to lead you to a real deal in the ugly house business. So for a recap, the ant farm, drive around, find ugly houses. You're probably going to want to take a picture, maybe with a digital camera so you can bring them home and download them very easily and inexpensively. And then you do whatever you can to find the owners on your own. And if you can't, just get on findtheseller.com and transfer all the addresses to them, and they'll find them for you. You don't need any information on these properties except for the address. That's all you need. If you can find the owner's name by going on public record, that'll help. It'll make it a lot easier, and they'll get more information. But if you just give them the address, they'll track these folks down for you, about 60, 70% of them. Now, when they get that back to you, 24 to 48 hours later, you get on the phone with 411 or look in your phone book. Remember, 411 is national. It doesn't make any difference where they live. And voila, you have a bunch of them there, right there. You'll get the phone numbers of a lot of those folks that own those vacant, ugly houses. And you pick up the phone and call them and ask them what's the least they'll accept. Okay, that's the ant farm. Method number two is realtors. We're going to come back here to realtors, because when we are buying ugly houses, which is what this part of this conversation is about, they are a dynamite way to buy properties. But remember, my warning was just about not relying on them solely to find the junkers. I buy properties through realtors all the time, but I wouldn't want my whole business to hinge on it. They always have a good source of ugly houses. Even the last couple of years, it's been a little tougher to buy them, but even then, I was able to buy a few. Nowadays, I think that cycle is turning, and I will grant you, you'll pay more if you buy them through a realtor, but there are still deals out there on the really ugly houses that you can buy cheap enough to make a big profit on. And in fact, remember now, they got to be really ugly, or I will tell you right now that buying them through realtors is a waste of your time and theirs. In fact, one of the houses that I mentioned earlier that my IRA got, that was through a realtor. We made a $86,000 profit on that house. It was a $200,000 house that we bought dirt cheap, and it was a bank property that they had taken back, but we bought it through a realtor. So that would have been an $86,000 profit that I would not have had without the use of a realtor. Now, here's some of the things to consider on listed houses. You'll probably need some proof of funds to submit an offer. Now, this can be anyone's bank statement, a letter from a mortgage broker, or a letter from anyone who says they'll fund the deal, or someone's mutual fund or IRA statement, or even your own credit card statement showing cash available to cover the purchase. Proof of funds doesn't mean that the funds must come from the source that you provide. Just because you show a realtor your mother-in-law's IRA statement doesn't mean that your mother-in-law is obligated to put up the money. It just means that there's money available. Also, remember that the only time you'll ever need proof of funds is when you use realtors. I've never known an individual seller to ask me for proof of funds. And usually the realtors want proof of funds because the banks that own some of the properties that you're going to be bidding on require them to get proof of funds before they will accept the offer. When you're dealing with a realtor, you can expect to put up at least a $500 deposit. That will be about your minimum. And from there, obviously, they're going to go up considerably depending on the offer price and the price of the property that you're dealing with. Get away from this $10 stuff. Well, when you're dealing with individuals, FSBOs, $10 is fine. If you're dealing with realtors, you're not going to get away with that. In fact, that's a sure sign of amateurism when you expect a realtor to take a $10 deposit. $500 will be the absolute minimum. They will guide you as to what the minimum they would accept. But don't forget, you do not have to give them what they're asking unless they can convince you it's a bank-owned property and that's the only way they can turn in the offer. You're in control of that, but don't get crazy on me here. Third thing about realtors is keep your offer clean with no contingencies. Don't cloud it up with a bunch of junk, a bunch of weasel clauses or contingency clauses. Your contract, any contract in the land, will give you the opportunity to get out of the deal and get your deposit back if the title is no good on it. So you don't have to worry about that. If you don't get a clear title, it's not a problem. Frankly, if you're making an offer on the property, you shouldn't be doing it anyway unless you'll know you'll buy it if it gets accepted for the offer you're making. But just remember this. Regardless of what happens, if you make a mistake, worst case scenario is that you will only lose the deposit that you put up. That is the most you can lose. That is your biggest risk. So you don't need a whole bunch of contingencies and weasel clauses. They will kill your deal quicker than anything. And if you intend to put weasel clauses and contingencies in offers to bank-owned properties, you have just instantly killed the deal. They will not accept all those weasel clauses. Now, there are bank properties, their contracts that they will ask the realtor to use have already got some spaces in there for things like inspection periods. And frankly, if they're in there, I'd leave it alone. And most of them give you time to get the property inspected and get out of the deal if you don't like what you find, and it's already built into the contract. But don't let any real estate course or book or some so-called real estate expert convince you to put a bunch of weasel clauses in your contract. Number four, you will be using the realtor's contract unless it's a bank-owned property and they tell the realtor we will only accept it on our contract. Don't even think about asking a realtor to use your contract that you got out of my course or anybody else's. They're going to use the one that they use that they're familiar with. And number five, the first time a realtor believes that you can't close, the game's over. The last thing you want to tell a realtor is that you want to wholesale the house. Just keep your mouth shut. As far as the realtor is concerning, you are purchasing the house, you are paying the cash, and you're raising the money to do it. And in fact, that's absolute truth. You are raising the money. It doesn't mean you're necessarily writing a check to buy it. It means that you very well might want to wholesale it and bring a buyer to the table who will bring the money in. Truthfully, nobody cares where the money's coming from, but the minute you say, I'm going to wholesale it, or I got to flip it, or I can't buy it, obviously, if you look at it from the other person's point of view, you can see why they would be very reluctant to do business with you. That means that you may not be able to buy the property. Your objective is to convince the realtor that you can buy the property, because you can. If you put a property under contract and you live enough profit in it for the next guy, selling bargains to bargain hunters is going to be the easiest part of your business. You're going to wish you had 10 or 15 of them when you start putting these things on the market wholesale. Number six, if a letter of intent is acceptable to the realtor, use it. In other words, there's no rule that says you got to fill out a 2, 3, 4, 5, 6-page contract to make an offer. It's quite common around the country where you just use a 1-page letter of intent. In other words, my intent is to offer blank. I will close in blank days. And then if the other side agrees with your intent or agrees with your offer, then they will tell the realtor, go write it up. Saves an awful lot of time. Number seven. Find the ugly houses that are listed first, then call the listing agents to make an offer. Don't try to get the realtors who deal in pretty houses to help you find ugly ones. This is a huge mistake that a lot of people make. That's like trying to get me into a size 28 pants. It will involve excruciating pain. And incidentally, if you remember our ant farm that we just talked about, it means you drive around, you look for ugly houses. And some of those are going to have listed signs on them. They're going to have realtor signs right on them. So if that's the case, you have just found realtors who list ugly houses. And from that point on, that realtor can't tell you anything like, well, there's no ugly houses in our town. Well, it's not true. Their name is on a sign in front of an ugly house. So what I'm trying to say here is find the ugly houses first, and then back into the realtors who list ugly houses, and then get those realtors to go find you more houses. Don't walk into a real estate office and say, hey, I want to buy some ugly houses, and expect realtors who list and sell pretty houses all day to understand, A, what you're talking about, or have the ability to go do it for you. You're just taking them out of your league. That's like asking a brain surgeon to do cosmetic surgery on your face. All right, method number three, direct mail. This will produce results if you do it correctly and stick to it. It always works. And in fact, there's no city it won't work in, but you still have to do it right. And there are numerous targets to mail to, so your best bet is to pick the two or three and focus on them. I'd suggest mailing to out-of-town owners, for sure. Out-of-town owners of ugly vacant houses, that's at the top of my list. And certainly people in foreclosure. Out-of-town owners are good, proven targets. And foreclosures and pre-foreclosures, I mean people that have already been foreclosed on is one great target. Pre-foreclosures, you can't get to until you get them to call you. But people that have been filed on, it's a matter of public record. You can get those lists very easily, actually. There are probably people in your city that will produce them for you. And if not, worst case, you go down to the courthouse once a week and get the list yourself. But I'll bet you'll even find that there's a financial news paper that produces all the filings at the courthouse, including the divorces and the bankruptcies and all of that, you can subscribe to. And every single weekday that thing comes out, right there in front of you are all the foreclosures. The condemned houses is another great list. Gosh, that's available right down at your code compliance office. Normally, you can walk in and get a list of the properties that are condemned in your city. And frankly, if you just do that, if you mail the condemned houses and people that are in foreclosure and out-of-town owners...